Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to QLS Classic Episode 80 with Lena Waif from April 2018. Fresh off her Emmy victory for writing on Aziz Ansari's awesome Master of None, we chop it up with Lena Waif about life in Hollywood, starting out as an intern, to an assistant, to an actress, to creator, to showrunner. Her journey's still going strong. So get ready for a nice ride and enjoy Lena Waif on QLS Classic.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Her name is Lena.
Yeah.
Not Lene.
Yeah.
Clever roll call verse.
Yeah.
I don't have a name.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
My name is Fonte.
Yeah.
My word is born.
Yeah.
The only Lena I acknowledge.
Yeah.
Other than horn.
Roll call. Suprema.
I know that's right.
Suprema roll call.
Robin Thede called.
Suprema. Suprema roll call.
Her name is Lena.
Yeah.
Let's introduce her.
Yeah.
Even though Common is her exec producer.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
I'm unpaid Bill.
Yeah.
And when it's said and done.
Yeah.
I'm the jack of few trades.
Yeah.
Master of none.
Hey. Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
It's La Ia.
Yeah.
Up in this piece.
Yeah.
I love me some Lena.
Yeah.
But I'm looking for Denise.
Roll call. Hey. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
My name is Lena.
Yeah.
I'm from the Shy.
Yeah.
I hope I don't mess this up,
yeah.
So I don't die.
Roll call, Suprema.
Suprema.
I don't have to turn.
Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call. Suprema, Suprema roll call.
Yes,
yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Questlove Supreme. I'm your host, Questlove.
Yes.
This is Pandora. Hello, Team Supreme.
What up?
Yes.
Hello.
Hey, Quest. Yeah. What's up,
everybody?
Hey, chatting with Sugar.
Yo, man's got a logo. Man's got a logo.
Let's move on. We'll talk about this some other time.
Like, but it's yeah, like you in. Made her mark, and now you are officially Sugar Steve chatting.
He's the Flash of the crew now. His store is coming in 2 weeks.
Yeah. I have, just so you know what they're talking about, I have my own talk show now.
Yes. Congratulations. Yes.
On IG.
On Instagram.
Oh, he has a spinoff already.
It's called Chatting with Sugar.
Yes.
I still think you should change the title, man. Like
Brown Sugar?
Well, that's not for
sure. To what, though?
Not yet.
It's already in the history books, man.
Well, no, chatting with Sugar.
Sometimes there's just no
going
back.
You didn't want us calling you Sugar Steve when we first started the show, and I had to force that title on you. So, I mean,
he's branded now. I like chatting with Sugar.
I'm
going to pop in on you one time. I'm going to join. I'm going to be
you
live.
You said your wife watches the show, right?
My wife is an avid watcher of Chatting with Sugar.
Stop.
She's one of 12.
She's
the number one fan.
Right.
Steve's we're starting to change.
The shit is
already.
The shit is really
she's
happening.
She's one of 17 followers.
I know it's really happening. I see you all the time on
but
it.
You taught me everything I know. I know, as a host.
Oh, God. That's always the death nail. Whenever someone says, you taught me everything.
He's like, that's why it's failing.
Now he's like, Pandora's about to offer me my side. Oh, God. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, today our special guest is an accomplished actress, producer, screenwriter, showrunner, and director. She made history in 2017 as the first... Wait, are you tired of people bringing up this factoid about you?
Like, better not be.
Like it's a unicorn. Like
it is though.
I mean, here's the truth.
Can I be the first show that doesn't just bring up that fact?
No, bring it up.
No one will let you not bring it up. That's the thing, is I have to just own that it's always going to be a part of my life and my career. Yeah. But I think it's a cool thing.
It's a cool thing.
You know.
But it's also sort of sad that in 2017
there's still first blacks.
That's the first.
Yeah. But people have to be reminded that of that sad fact.
Okay. Yeah. But well, it was dope because I share it with Donald. Like Donald is the first black person ever win for directing an episode of comedy television. So I feel like it was nice to make history with him.
I did a Hallie Denzel before the Emmys.
Yeah, exactly.
I love when we do the interview before I even get the introduction out.
I know.
Anyway, she made history in 2017 as the first African American female to win an Emmy for outstanding writing on a comedy series for the very excellent Thanksgiving episode of one of my favorite shows, Master of None.
Thank you.
And you're also the showrunner of the critically acclaimed Shy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, creator.
Also a big thing for a black woman, because there's only like three of y'all.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. It's like me, Shonda, Mara, Courtney Kemp, who created Power. A lot of people forget about Courtney, but Courtney's out here
Ava,
doing it.
Does she count?
Absolutely.
She's in waiting. She's Shonda in waiting, because she's about to do Get Christy Love. We still haven't introduced our guest.
Oh, okay.
Wait, welcome to Questlove Supreme.
Yes.
I'm happy to be here.
I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
So that's, my question was, are you tired of having to bear the burden of being the first of, in 2017?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm tired of it. I think I'm very proud to be a vessel. That's what I really feel like. It's like, because I know I'm not the first black woman who ever has written a funny episode of television. I just think it takes the industry a while to kind of catch up. So I think the stars are sort of aligned and for me to have that amazing accomplishment. But the truth is, I went to the Oscar parties and stuff like that, got a chance to chop it up with Halle Berry, the one and only. She still looks great. And the sad part was, when we watched the packages for like best actress, best lead actress, she's still the only one. Wow. No one has followed her since winning for Monsters Ball. And I brought that up, to her, and I thought, man, like that's troublesome. And she said, yeah. And I think for me, my biggest mission with it is to make sure I'm not the last. I'm out here mentoring like crazy. I'm trying to, walk people into rooms, because I don't mind being the first as long as there's others that can walk through. Because then what happens is people just celebrate that moment and go, oh, aren't we grand? Like, we had this moment. And I think Donald feels the same way. I think, I think we want to make sure that we're this short list that we're on, which we are on. There's a very short list of people that they just go to us for everything. We want to make it longer. We want to introduce them to these new writers that are out here doing dope stuff.
What's the process of even finding quality? Because I know, there's an argument of being included or getting a seat at the table,
right,
versus bringing something quality to the table.
Uh-huh.
And that's often a debate we have. I mean, there's, black film out there now that might, or black actors or writers or whatever who are...
It might be whatever, but it's black. We got to support it.
Right.
Yeah. Or else we ain't going to get another one.
And some that bring in the money aren't necessarily the quality that you particularly enjoy.
Absolutely.
That sort of thing. So how is one able to vent through that? Because I always felt as though the process of getting to greatness, not saying that I've ever heard stories of Martin Scorsese being an intern on a set somewhere and then eventually working his way up to... What do you start with? Woodstock as an editor? But it's like, what's the process of getting in behind the scenes? Because I feel what's more notable about you is that even though you're an actress I know on a show I like, your behind the scenes work is very substantial. And that, I feel, is more important for you to pull people in.
Right. Well, look, I mean, you bring up a really interesting point, because it's a very controversial topic, that I'm trying to deal with. And we just got greenlit to do a pilot called 20s over at TBS, which is a half hour, which is loosely based on my 20s, being a queer black girl living in Los Angeles. Thank you so much. Who is an aspiring television writer as well. Mm-hmm. And she's a little bit, this character is not exactly me, but she's a little bit ballsier than me. And there's a fictitious, black show that she's trying to get a job on. And she talks to her girls about it, and she's like, man, I don't want to go work on that show.
Is this based on the G word?
No.
Because I know you worked at Girlfriends. For...
Yeah, but no, it's not that. It's not okay, that. No. Okay. But it's honestly, it's like it's not based on. I'm creating like characters to kind of talk about issues I want to discuss. Even though, but I'm also just using my dating life as a bit of fodder for like this character. But the thing is like there are shows that Black folks don't love, but you can't say it in public.
Right.
And so
that's
and I
every
think,
show.
No,
for Black shows? No.
Okay.
Who don't like Atlanta? Let's...
Right. True. No. Well, I mean, Atlanta is a fucking.
Who don't
unicorn.
Like Blackish?
No, I'm. Yeah.
No, those are like, well, critical. Yeah, I mean, I'm talking like Tyler Perry, House of Pain, or something.
In
like
public,
that.
You say it, and to other people, yeah, it's cool.
Well,
but
I don't know if that. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think there are people that genuinely. Can I curse on this?
Yeah.
Yes. There are people that genuinely fuck with those shows. You know, oftentimes they live in the South. You know what I'm saying? Or maybe not. Or maybe they're supposed to be living in New York City.
No, they live like, in the South. My mother watches those shows religiously.
But I'm just saying. But there are people that really fuck with. I'm talking about shows that you feel like, or even movies sometimes, where you're like. Okay, and you see the campaigns, like they go on Instagram, all the celebrities are saying, yeah, there's a guilt trip you almost feel like you on if you don't go
you
see it, you don't post your
it.
Ticket, you know, and I just kind of feel like that then becomes, it kind of goes, joint?
No.
I mean, look.
Hey,
what
you're telling the truth.
I'm just saying, yeah. Like, there's a guilt that you feel, and the question it becomes is like, when do we get to that point? But I think that's why, again, it's proof that the playing field is still not leveled because we don't have enough movies where we can skip it. How many white folks, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, got to go see Death Wish this weekend. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't right. know. It's just like, but I do think there's this pressure on Black folks to go support Black stuff, whether you love it or not. And I just don't think we've gotten to that place where you can't go online and be like, Even with my show, like, I don't know what's real because I don't know if there's somebody's gonna come out and go, yeah, the shot's just okay. Because then folks will be like, why are you hating on, you know, da da da. There becomes, and my thing is, I'm like, I welcome it. If you don't fuck with it, tell me why. So
you'll
then
say it
I
in
can
private,
improve
Lena.
It.
It's like in private amongst us. I've heard some interesting Chicago comments about the shot, but they would never say it in front of others.
Yeah.
But my thing is, you have to. Like, what's the deal? I feel like until we can start criticizing each other in public, we ain't gonna ever overcome. Like, we just kind of have to. But I think there's this thing of, like, we don't want to talk about it. And trust me, I'm guilty of it. Like, there's things that maybe I don't love, but I ain't going to talk about that shit on Twitter. Exactly. I ain't going to go in on Instagram. Yeah. I'm going to be supportive.
And I think that's just about our community, too. Like, we just don't kind of air our dirty laundry. Yeah. Like, if I have a criticism about your show, I can say that to you, me and you talking, but I ain't going to say that in a room full of white folk. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like that's,
I get it. But I also think it's, and I think Donald and I have had this conversation, is that he and I always want to be better. We always want to make our stuff great. You know, we don't ever want somebody to say, oh, yeah, I like that show because I'm supposed to. Yeah. It's like, now, mind you, we can't please everybody. You know what I'm saying? We're making TV shows. This is our point of view. This is our cities from through our lens. So everybody may have a different version of Chicago than I do, or people may have a different version of Atlanta than Donald does. But I think if there's a real thing of like, that is not a real thing in the city, or we don't go through that, or that's some fake shit you done made up, like, please, by all means, like, tweet about it, talk about it, pipe up about it. But I do think there's a lot of these Black artists live in this bubble of like, you only want good things. And you know, there's some artists that I feel like, I like to call it being under the tent for too long, where they start, you see their material and it's almost like watching Muhammad Ali fight past his prime.
Well, okay, is there a such thing as snobbery?
I shot fire, but you don't know who I'm shooting them at, so it's all good.
No, okay, so let's take, like, does it make me snobby if I look down on Meet the Browns and Tyler? Because I mean, the pros of it is that he has his own studio,
right?
He's putting people to work,
right?
Yada yada yada. But
charming dude, I met him the first time over Oscar weekend.
Yeah, fucking love Tyler. But I'm just saying that, the way that Spike went about criticizing him,
yeah,
right.
I mean, is it, again? It almost makes you question your taste. And I have this about hip hop all the time. Uh-huh. Like, you know, I wasn't very forthcoming and saying that, oh, I mean, maybe I was a little indifferent to something. Let me think of something.
Gambino?
Like Cardi B or like something?
No,
like.
No, I'm thinking of something old, like, okay, back when, all right, so back in the day when MJG first came out, or UGK.
Okay.
I was slow to open up to UGK and MJG. And then once Reek started really fucking with it on the tour bus, then I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, Chicago, that was.
Yeah, we used to really go hard on that. Yeah.
it took me a while because I came from jazz samples with like my East Coast, that sort of thing. But is it like, I'm trying to figure out if either I have mob mentality and willing myself to like something that I normally would think is lowbrow humor.
I think you just have to, for me, I look at it, you have to look at the audience that it's intended for. And like, does something, does it hit its target? You know what I'm saying? And so for me, like my mom watches Meet the Browns and like, what's the other one you got? The haves and have
nots.
Dog.
And Loving You is Wrong.
Oh, that's, all of, that's she watches real. That,
like, you can't call her while
this
that's on.
This is like an SNL skit, us running through these titles, don't you?
She it's watches like, them joints. And so it's like, it's not for me. You have to learn. It's like, all right, this is not my kind of thing. But the audience that he's going for, he's
but
killing
I'm saying,
it with that audience. You know what I mean?
But again, is it subjective? Is it really lowbrow humor that you're above? Or are we just...
Here's
past it all, and we think we're better than that.
Look, here's the deal, and I own my snobbiness. Like, I'm totally aware of it. Like, I work in the business. I have a very critical eye. I try to sometimes come back from that, but I just can't. And also, my fiance is, well, she's an exec, but now she runs Michael B. Jordan's production company. Mm-hmm. So we are aware that we go to the Arclight, we have our assigned seats, like, we're those black people.
Are you serious?
But, yeah, that's like, hilarious. It's just like, whatever, is it what it is. But I think, to me, what's scary about those shows is that they're constantly being pumped to the same black audiences. What happens is, I always look at it like food and what you digest. So they're being given McDonald's, which is fast, it tastes good, and it goes through you really quickly.
And it changes your palate. You never get a taste for nothing else.
So then it's like when you try to give you something like filet mignon, like foie gras, caviar, escargot, a la Moonlight, Get Out, things like that. Sometimes it becomes difficult for them to eat that food.
They have to stop it.
Because they're so used to McDonald's. Mm-hmm. So that's my only thing. I was like, I'm cool people... you know, taking in that kind of entertainment. But the tough thing, especially for black folks, it's like what I want is for our people to have a more sophisticated palate, so to speak, which is like they go see Boo, you know, but then also go see Moonlight, you know, go see, you know, a movie like Shape of Water. I just kind of want our folks to have that kind of exposure. It's not unlike, you know, when we deal with kids on the South Side who've never been downtown, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're only watching those shows. And so what happens is, and also too, even though, yes, it's funny and light and it's all good, and Tyler is, like, he's such a good dude, I think it can get a little nutty when that's the only, images are so powerful. Like, because I grew up, I was very blessed. Like, as a kid, I got to watch A Different World, like, every Thursday, and The Cosby Show, and, like, Fresh Prince, and things like that. And so I was seeing images of people that I wanted to be. They were smart, they were fly, they were cool. They were literally on a fictitious, like, HBCU, you know, a campus every week. And it may seem like, oh, isn't that cheesy, but look at what it did. My production company is called Hillman Grab Productions.
Yeah.
Like, I was going to say, at the end of...
The Shy, yeah.
First of all, y'all have a lot of tags at the end of the show.
Hopefully I get rid of some of the motherfuckers.
No, that was that was the funniest thing to me, because after the third one, I was like waiting for do 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 do.
Like, she's literally so many people.
She had like,
at least,
like,
I got a card in that motherfucker.
But when I saw Hillman, I started going back. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And I said, that has to be her.
And look, it's like, some people know, some people don't. It's like, whatever. If you know, you know. If
but
you
people
don't,
get
you
it.
Don't.
They get, well,
yeah, they
know,
get
they
it.
Know,
I really fuck with you. Usually they
it's,
go like, oh,
it's your show,
him?
Though. Why would you put yourself fifth? Like, wouldn't your card
no,
be
the... that's Hollywood. That's Hollywood politics.
Yeah, about this one.
It's my first show, so you get executive producers that go, well, I want, you know, where the cards are placed. Mm-hmm. It was
Common.
My first show.
Yep.
Did you even know to ask for that?
They gave it to me after the fact. And once some stuff happened in my career, they were like, oh, yeah, we'll get you a card.
Lena, let me ask you, you mentioned Hillman.
That's a whole other conversation.
You mentioned Hillman in A Different World. I was wondering what you think about the evolution of to grown-ish, because I just really started watching that, and you know that that is a real... child of a different world.
Yeah, I would never put the two in the same weight class. I mean, honestly, to me, that's no shade to
Grown-ish.
Grown-ish
is intense, especially because it's on Freeform.
I haven't watched it yet.
I've seen it.
I'm addicted to it.
Oh, wow.
I kind of like it, too. People kind of be throwing shade at it. I was like I'm kind of into it. Yeah, some people I know, maybe it's those black people that's like, don't want to say something publicly, but some people be coming at me about it. I'm like, I don't know. I kind of get a good vibe from it.
I mean, it's
I
just
know.
That
it's interesting. I'm intrigued.
First
by
of
it.
All, it's a Freeform show, which is basically like
a channel very few people get.
The ABC Family
right
recontextualizes Freeform.
Yeah,
But it's like, I done seen...
They fucking, I mean, sucking she, and she, everything else on that
she pops, she pops pills every episode. And,
oh, shit.
And
yeah. It's like they trying to
have sex. Issue.
And they trying to go, they trying to get real with it, mm-hmm. you know? But I mean, but I again, it's like, to me, it's like, I just don't, I would never put them in a... Even if Kenya was sitting here right now, he'd be like, please don't put that on me.
I wasn't putting it on, world. But would it be there if it wasn't for A Different World? That's what I was kind of saying. Would
sure.
you know how to put it
I mean,
to-
I don't know. I just, here's the deal. I'm in A Different World purist.
And I think that... You ain't alone.
And I think that,
and I'm older than you.
And I think that Grown-ish is not, because that's not an HBCU, is it?
No.
No,
yeah,
it's
so
college.
I just kind of feel like, I think so, even with Dear White People, people try to like say, oh, are you guys influenced? I'm like, no. I'm like, right. Because Dear White People is literally a metaphor for America, because it's like the black people on that campus are a minority, and it's all about how weird you feel and like what kind of black person you are, what kind of black people you hang out with. So I just think it's very different. I think A Different World exists in its own space and time. I'm also one of the people that's anti a reboot of it or all this kind of shit. I just think it's silly. It's like A Different World existed at that time. And we don't need to reboot it. We don't need to have another version. And I've gotten to get cool with a lot of the actors from that show. I'm just like, nah, son, it happened and thank God and leave it alone. I feel about Bad Boys. It should never have been a sequel. Like, Bad Boys is a classic. It wasn't supposed to work. It did by accident. Thank God. I don't, Bad Boys 2 and Bad Boys 3, I'm not here for any of it.
It is
not here for any of it.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
I think they pulled it though.
Okay. Whew. They stopped talking about it.
Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, it's remake season. I mean, Shaft is getting the remake. Everybody's getting...
But I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Well, yeah. Grown-ish to me is like a more nuanced, friendlier version of Kids.
Mm. Oh, wow. Whoa.
I mean, it's real. I mean, yeah. Kids was shocking in 95.
Yeah.
But now that's just like, oh, that's a Tuesday.
Yeah.
So, Lena,
yeah,
what was your beginning in the world of acting? Like, how did you first start?
Honestly, like,
or a production, or
well, I'll talk about the acting. I had no plans on being an actor. Like, I literally give a lot of credit, one, to God, because He ordered my steps, but also to these amazing casting directors that looked at me and said, "Bitch, you should be in front of the camera as well." And one of them was Allison Jones, who is a famed casting director. If you Google her, I mean, her credits are ridiculous. Everything from like she cast Freaks and Geeks, which literally gave us Seth Rogen and James Franco, all these people. Mm-hmm. And then she also cast like Veep and Bridesmaids and all these amazing things. So I heard she went to meet with me. I didn't know why, because I was like, I'm not casting anything. But I went and sat down with her, and she asked if I had any interest in being an actor. I said no. She's like, okay, but let me bring you in for some stuff. And so she did. She brought me in for some things. I booked a small part on The Comeback season 2, which mm-hmm. was Lisa Kudrow's show on HBO. And then she didn't even call me in for Master of None. Like, apparently Aziz and Alan just said, send us interesting people. And by the grace of God, she said, well, then you should meet Lena. I went to Aziz's crib, sat with him and Alan, and had a just was just myself. And I got a call then like, hey, Aziz wants you to come read with him. I saw the pages and I was my writery self. And I said, yo, can I punch this up? And Aziz
nice.
Was like, sure. And so I did. And so I was saying stuff back to him that he obviously wasn't prepared for. And he was sort of chuckling and laughing. But Aziz and I just had an instant like vibe and a chemistry, because people seriously ask us if we've been friends for before the show, and
so.
We hadn't. We met like, you know, at his house and talking and doing these scenes, and then he called me and he's like, come to New York for a couple months and do this show with me. And I just really went off of like the fact that I was a fan of his already, his humor, the fact that he knows black culture in a very unique way, and I just loved him on Parks and Rec. And I just sold The Chi to Showtime, and I was like, can y'all give me 3 months to go away do this thing? They were like, okay. Sure. And so I came here. You don't know what you have with Netflix. It was early Netflix still. We were like one of like mm-hmm. Netflix like fourth or fifth original shows. So we didn't know what it was gonna be. We don't have an audience, but we just trusted that what we were doing was something interesting. It was new, it was fresh, and people just really responded to it. And then for the Spielberg joint, Ellen Lewis, another famed casting director, saw my picture in Hollywood Reporter and was like, why haven't we seen this girl for this role? And my agents were like, because she's not auditioning for stuff. So I came in, read with them, read again. Thank God Spielberg was not in either of those auditions. But after the second one, he saw my tape and was like, yeah, I want her to be in the movie. And then I went to London for 4 months.
So wait, wow. You just said something real big. Before we saw your face, you had a deal with Showtime.
They had bought the pilot. Yeah, I'd written the pilot and they were like, yeah, we want to make this.
How did, I mean, because
so
people...
So what was the time between making your pilot to...
Well, here's the deal. We shot the first pilot and we weren't super happy with how it turned out. We thought it was fine, but we were like, they were like, I told them, I said, I need a director that really gets my voice. I know my voice is unique. I know The Shy is not the typical formulaic show. So like, I need somebody that's not the typical formulaic director. And Rick Famuyiwa became available. And I was like, can he do get a swing at it? They were like, sure. They're like, we think that'll be a great match. We got a new casting director. We got Jason Mitchell came in and read, and Jacob Lattimore, all these amazing Sonya Song, all these amazing people. And
so
they
the
just
original pilot is different than what I seen on the pilot for Showtime.
I mean, it's the script is the same, but the cast is different. And the director is different.
Okay.
So it made a world of difference.
Can you please, I just want to A-B them back. Can you send me a copy of the original one that you had?
I don't even know if I have an original copy of it anymore.
I got to see
because, like,
that
was 2 years ago. But it was like, and mind you, I liked it. I thought it was fine. But I think Showtime, and that's a testament to them. They really believed in it, and they were like, we think we can do better. And I was like, okay. I was like, cool.
Now, was there any concern of yours that Showtime was trying their hardest to not mention the W word as they gave you The Shy, like, you know,
we need a Wire,
our version of The Wire, like that sort of thing?
It's funny, like they didn't know, they didn't bring that up at all. And the crazy thing is, and I don't want to be a bad black person, but I never like obsessed over The Wire like that. I was more about The Corner.
White people love The Wire more than we do.
Yeah,
white
no,
people, and I love The Wire.
But I like The Wire, but I was more into The Corner.
Steven,
white people love The Wire.
Yeah, okay. White people love The Wire. They love Insecure. Like they're like all about it. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, but I feel like I just never, that was never my thing. Like, mm-hmm. The Corner was really dope. This is a thing that Spike did a long time ago. People may not remember, called Sucker Free City. That was really cool. That really, I just really liked and thought it was really interesting. So those were things. And also, too, like House of Cards, you know, had come out. So I was really inspired by that. So those were really inspirations for me while I was working on The Shy in terms of characters being interconnected and bumping into each other. And yeah, but it's so funny because I understand the comparison, I guess. But when you watch The Shy, it's the completely
well, I
different.
Know there's no comparison, but just with large black ensemble on a cable show.
Sure.
You know,
there's
people
the
are. And I mean,
but
the,
I really
the characters
on
The Wire had a connection with each other. It's sort of like an effortless, watching the Magic Circle for the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah,
a very effortless, no look pass chemistry that they had with each other.
Right.
So
The Shy, like, my biggest thing was I didn't want to focus on the system or the police or the cops. And I think we're going to get away from that even more in season two, because I think first season was like, okay, well, what's the engine? But I was like, I would say, like, I really don't care about the cops. I was like, I care about the people. Like, I don't want to care talk about the police. I want to talk about the people who are being policed. Like, that's just more interesting to me.
So not to step on your toes, boss man, but I'm like, okay, so nobody saw your face yet. You have this deal with Showtime. I know that your background as writer's assistant and your relationship with Gina Prince Blythewood. But can you really break down, like, who the hell are you leaning to get these amazing deals, to this writing? Like, where did you come from?
Ouch, my toes.
I'm so sorry.
I know you're stepping on my toes.
I'm so sorry, but I just...
You know, like, honestly, like, I, you know, graduated from Columbia College, which is in Chicago, moved out to LA in 2006, and just started, like, pounding the pavement, just grinding. I think it's just a Chicago hustle in me, where I was just like, I went out there with the intent of running the town. And I was like, eventually, and you know, and I think that was genuinely my mindset. You know, I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to win the Emmy by this year, da, 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 da. But I was just like, I want to be a phenomenal writer. I really cared about the craft. And I think that's a big thing I see, was as I mentor a lot of young writers, I think that's sort of the last thing on their list to conquer. They're sort of like, well, where's the red carpet? Like, when do I get the deal? And da, 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 da. They don't realize there's so much politics. You're talking about me being a third card on my own show. Mm-hmm. Like, these folks be thinking you get a show and like you king or queen. It's like, no. It's like, I was like the least powerful person at the table.
Still,
you know what I'm saying?
And it's your brainchild.
Now I'm in a different space.
Right.
You know, but your first
now.
Season. And Emmys. Here's the truth. And that's no shade to my network or my studio. That's any case. Like, if you go sold a show tomorrow, they don't know you. They could fire you. They own your show.
Yeah.
But how different was your life the day after the Emmy? Like, is with the Emmy the...
Oh, the Emmy changed. Yeah. Right. I mean, let's be clear. Like, it just... And also, too, it's like it changed the dynamics on The Shy for me. Mm-hmm. It changed the in terms of how I walked through the world. But even... Here's the truth. Like, I was already very clear about who I was and the kind of artist I want to be before the Emmy. Like, I was, you know, I would say no to things. Certain things I would go like, I don't know if I'm the right person for this, or that just feels like a check and I don't want to just like sell myself for that. Like, and I think there's this element where I sometimes see people and they go like, but why would you not do that? That makes sense. I'm like, but it may seem cool. Don't get caught up in the announcement on deadline, you know, because that's fleeting. It's like, will it be a cool thing for people to retweet? Sure. But like, what about the quality of my life? Do I want to work with that person really? Yeah, they're a big star, but do I want that person being my partner that I'm getting in bed with? It's like, no, I'd rather go with the normal motherfucker who ain't that hot than the famous person that might give me a headache.
Actually, ooh, you know what? I'm going to use this moment. I'm sorry. Now I got to step on all y'all toes. Yeah. I need some advice right now.
Go ahead. Ooh.
Advice from Lena Waithe.
Don't eat in bed.
Yes.
We're not talking about that.
Well, we can get there.
I eat in bed every night. No shame.
I'm sorry. I miss my Barry White cue. No, I'm sorry. So when you, just for those that don't understand the process of creating a script and show running, can you run us through? So are you saying that once you complete a script that you're happy with, you and your collaborator, or you yourself, whatever, once it's in the hands of the production company or the whatever, Showtime or whoever you're rolling with, is it 100% out of your hands? Is it up to the director to then see what he wants to, or she wants to see with what's on the script?
Well, it usually depends because, like, for me, and I'll try to take you through, like, a fictitious scenario, but, like, but even for the shot, I wrote that by myself, like, on spec. On spec means for free. Like, nobody paid me to write that. I just said, oh, I want to write this story, so I wrote it. And then I gave it to my agents, and I was like, okay, I want you guys to send this out to production companies because I do feel like having a production company, then you, in like, places like Brad Pitt has a production company called Plan B. You know, what's another good one? I don't know. Kerry Washington has a production company. There are certain places you can give your script to because at the time, like, I wasn't really a name, so I was like, maybe I can get in bed with a producer who has a little bit more weight, who's got those connections, that then they then say, okay, we put our arm around Lena, we're going to walk into all these different networks and say, we really believe this is a thing. Or then go to a studio, because a studio is like a bank. A studio, they pay for everything and the network airs the show. So I got in bed with a producer, Aaron Kaplan, dude, I call him the Tony Soprano of like TV producers. He's got like 8 shows on that he's an EP on. And so he doesn't necessarily have to be like super involved in every single show, but he's a person that has a lot of like connections and can walk in the door and say, yo, I think this is dope. So he and I, he's like, if I can't produce this show, it's not producible. Okay, I believe you. So then he takes me into a studio, which is now Fox 21, but it used to be FTVS. So he was like, yo, I think you guys should read this girl's script. Andy Bourne, exec over there, he read it. He's like, I like this script so much. If we don't sell this script to a network, we're going to fold into a blind deal. That's how much we believe in Lena. And a blind deal means if it don't go, they'll pay me to just write whatever else I want to write. So that means they had a lot of confidence in my voice and who I was.
And around what year is this?
Oh, Jesus, I'm so bad with that. It's probably 3 or 4 years ago, something like that.
Okay.
So now I got a producer. I got a who has his production company. He's like a production company, and now I have a studio. So I got a place that's saying like we're gonna pony up the money for this show. Whoever decides to do it. So then they're like, where do you want to sell it to? Then you figure out what makes sense for the show. Like, what's a good home for the show? So I was like, I really like Showtime because they had just done this show called The Affair, which I thought was super dope and really unique and really fresh. And I was like, if they can do The Affair, they should want to do, you know, The Shy. So we went into Showtime first. That was like my top school that I wanted to get into. So we go into Showtime, we have a wonderful meeting, and they bite immediately. They're like, yeah, we love it, we love you, let's do it. So and by that time, and also some other stuff, like Common was like, I want to be involved. I was like, you absolutely should be involved. We brought him on as an EP, and then we even brought in a director as well. But low key, I think depending on who you are, you don't necessarily need a whole army to walk with you into a network. But it's only no longer out of your hands once you sign a deal with somebody. Like if you sign a deal with a studio where they're like, yeah, we want to be in business with you, Questlove, with this script, we want to buy it, we want to give you a check, we're going to do all things. Now they do own it. They now own it. You don't own it anymore. And if they don't like you or you do something wrong, they do have the right to fire you off the show and bring somebody else in to run it and do it. And even on my show, my first season, I had a showrunner. I didn't run that show for the first season because also you don't want to showrun your first season because being a showrunner is like the worst job on the planet. But it's also the most powerful job on the planet. The showrunner has more power than the creator of the show. Does that make sense? Because the showrunner is the person who is running the room, who's talking to the network, talking to the studio. And a lot of people don't even know what a showrunner is. So funny, like, I'm not putting nobody on blast, but the showrunner of Empire, who still is, was never Lee Daniels. He created the show with Danny, right?
Danny Strong.
Mm-hmm. They created the show together, but neither one of them really... Danny might say he kind of helped showrun, mm-hmm. but... Yeah, a white woman showrun that continues to showrun the Empire. I don't tell a secret.
No, I just thought it was Danny Strong.
Eileen Shaken, who ran L Word.
So by the transitive axiom, because
I know what that is.
Because what?
What'd you just say?
The transitive axiam.
A equals B and B equals C.
Okay, so I knew that as the transitive.
Is that helpful? What I'm saying, or is it confusing?
Well, I'm trying to transitive axiom. You're basically telling me the Toni Braxton or TLC story. Like, you're on LaFace, which is a production deal under another entity, which is under Arista Records. So it's like...
But she has more power than them, right?
No, I know. But you said you had the option to either go with someone that can walk into the room, a la the Brad Pitt or whoever the Tony Soprano is.
Aaron Kaplan, right.
Right. So are you saying that it's likely, it's not that likely, if you yourself just walked it to the head of Showtime...
You
need heat. You need people.
I don't know if I agree with that anymore. Really? Sorry.
Because you're you now, though.
No, but the truth is, they wanted my script. They wouldn't have cared if I came from 10 buck fucking two.
So what
they
I'm saying,
to buy that script.
The position that you're in would you walk someone direct to...
I already have. Like, there's a
direct to the
front
of the line, or is it like, come through me, and then I'll put you through my boy, and then my boy, and then my...
No. I'm a believer going straight to the source. Like, there's a girl who writes on The Shy who's super dope. Her name is Kathy Kasake. She wrote a phenomenal pilot. She also wrote another pilot. But I'm an EP on that pilot, and we just had a meeting at Showtime, and we went around, all the kind of stuff like that. And I was like, we're going straight to the source. Now, mind you, I have a very different relationship with Showtime now, and so when I walk somebody in, they're like, oh, great. Mm. But I also believe that at the end of the day, everybody, a dope script is like a freaking lottery ticket.
Right.
So you don't need, a team of people with you if you got a lottery ticket to go cash your shit in. If you got that lottery ticket, that's all that matters. And what's happening now is, like, content is king and queen. So they don't care where you from. Look at Diablo Cody. Like, look at her story. Even though Jordan Peele had been around for a long time doing that. But, like, that script was something that people were like, okay, this is a game changer. Right. And that's why you never heard of Blumhouse. You know what I'm saying? But they were like, we want to do this thing. And now everybody and their mama want to get in business. But ultimately, it's like, if you got a dope script, those execs want to make the thing. Now, what they want to do is surround you with people who know what the fuck they're doing. You don't want some kid, you give them the keys to a Porsche, say, okay, go drive it.
Yeah.
So it's like, so what happens is, usually you sit in the passenger side while somebody who knows how to drive drives the car for you, and you tell them where to turn and where to go and keep straight, this and that. But it is very complicated. It's a thing that nobody knows, because it's like with TV works, like, no one person can write every single episode of a show. It just, you hear people like Aaron Sorkin and like Matthew Weiner, but people like even Shonda and myself, and like, we need help to do these shows. Yeah. There's a writer's room. There's people we have to lean on and trust. And a lot of us have showrunners, that are running the show for us, and we give the creative input. But if you don't get along with your showrunner, shit gets real sticky.
So from the time you created the pilot to it actually making it on air, that was what, 3-4 years?
About maybe two years, actually, yeah. Because we took 1 year, we shot the original, we took another year to do that one, and they put it out.
But how many great scripts get overshadowed because there's not a great team around it? I feel like that happens all the time.
But and that is true, and I think that's what the Blacklist site is becoming really helpful. My dude Franklin Leonard started that, where, like, anybody, you ain't got to have a manager, you ain't got to have nothing. If you put a script up there, you pay to get an evaluation, if you get, like, an 8 or above, that means you got a really good script. And what happens is people like me can download them, send them around. That's why I went on my Twitter and said, look, I now have a development fund. I'm looking to find writers. I don't care where you are. If you got a manager, you got an agent, if you're young, black, old, white, gay, queer, whatever. If you got a dope script that's interesting, that makes sense for my production company to help get developed and get out there in the world, I want to see it. When you talk about how to cut through all the clutter, that's what the Blacklist site does. And a lot of black folks sometimes be like, well, I don't want to put my shit into the internet. I'm like, look, what else? What's your alternative? Know what I'm saying? It's like, pay to get evaluated. It's like $75 for a feature, like something that's less than that for a pilot. And you put it up there and you get professional fucking feedback. Because that's a lot of people out here writing in their offices and thinking they got Shakespeare. And then somebody's like, nah, this is the have and have nots. No shade, no tea.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, it's like nobody's getting feedback.
What's the website, Lena? Say it again. Just
the Blacklist site. But actually, it's the site. It's without vowels. So BLCKLST. blacklist.com, blcklst.com. But if you Google Franklin Leonard Blacklist site, it'll pop up. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to do, all you got to do, if you got like $75, you got a feature you want to just upload, pay to get a fucking evaluation. And if you get a 5, you know what that means? Maybe you should get some writing classes. Yeah, ain't nothing wrong with that. If you get an 8, that means you got a pretty solid script on your hands, and then you should either hit me up or you can hit almost anybody up and say, hey, I got an overall 8 score on the Blacklist site, and motherfuckers in the business will know what that means. They're going to go, oh, so that means you got a pretty decent script. Can you send it? And also, here's a great thing. It cuts the work out for me because you can send me that evaluation. It'll tell me how many pages it is, what the log line is, what the title is. It'll tell me what the strengths are in the script, what the weaknesses are, and what its potential is.
See, but unlike...
I'm sorry, what's the how long does that process take for him to evaluate?
Sometimes it takes about, like, you know, a few days, sometimes a week.
Wow.
Okay,
niggas
so
don't know about this shit.
Unlike someone playing me a demo, and mm-hmm. I'm right. telling you, there's maybe 8 right. times in my life I've listened to a demo. His was one of them. No, for real.
Yeah.
Like, Jill Scott, Slum Village, him, oh, wow. Bilal. I'm
oh,
almost...
Oh, damn. You have good
track record.
Yeah. Like, I... My there's... Yeah, I don't have the patience to sit yeah. through.
But how did you? My question is, but how did you end up listening to like a Jill Scott's demo?
Very specific circumstances. Okay. Long time ago, Jill, I was really in love with you, and I thought it was smashing.
She knows.
Let's
you were trying to get
phone.
With Jill. People seen that video.
She
knows.
She don't know.
Oh, she might be
she
back on the market
now
too.
I think she's back on the market.
But you're not.
I have a woman now. No,
that's
no,
right.
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thanks for the help, Lena. Thanks.
Sorry.
I won't even bet no more. I promise.
Gotcha.
You better eat.
No, but no. It was very specific circumstances. Mm-hmm. Like what was it? Like a thunderstorm
when we were at the Little Brother show at Duke.
Yeah. So a thunderstorm canceled our show, and I felt bad for all the Duke fans that had to stand this monsoon to wait for the roots to come on. So I was like, all right, let me just go in the front row and shake everyone's hands. And you put it in my hands?
Yeah, I gave it to you. I gave you the little brother, like our first little joints. We had like 4 or 5 joints.
Yeah, he put it in my hand, and I don't know what made me just...
Wow.
And I never... CDs are always like coasters to me.
Right.
And I was like, let me listen to this. And I heard a sample. I recognized Chow. I was like, oh, shit.
Wow.
And then I realized that, oh, these guys are awesome. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was very rare circumstances to which...
And Bilal was like a human saxophone or something when you heard his, heard his demo.
Bilal was just crazy. And
still is.
Yeah
he's still is.
Not much
dope,
changed.
Crazy talented.
But
yes,
that's
he
the
is.
Thing. It's like, you know, like for
my
reading scripts
was,
takes even more energy.
Yeah,
out
I was
going
to say,
shit.
For me to listen to a 5-minute song is hard
that's
as hell.
That's right. Easier for you.
You like, need silence. Oh, and
that's time. Like,
so do you have a regimen that you do? Like, do you spend 2 hours every morning in silence looking at scripts?
It depends. Like, I mean, honestly, what I try to do is make it so that if I'm reading a script, it better be damn good. So I have...
How do you know if it's bullshit? By page what?
Oh, I can tell from the first... Like, what's your opening line? I mean, it's right there. The voice is either there or it's not. It's almost like singing or a competition like that. It's like either you can hear it from the first note. To me, action lines are really important because... And so is dialogue. But action lines are the things that you guys don't know or see. Like, you know, that's... You hear the dialogue, but the action lines are like describing the space, describing the characters. That's where my personality comes out, you know, about how I describe someone. Like, I'll describe a character like she has the kind of beauty that sneaks up on you, and she has mommy issues that she still hasn't dealt with. This is so and so, and she's 35 years old, or whatever. That's how I'll describe a character, which speaks to how my personality and who I am.
So, you want them to know how smart and witty you are based on how you describe characters?
Yeah, like that's me giving you my shit, you know, because when the characters start talking, that's them. Like, I can't, you know, I have to step into their shoes. But in between that, I get to kind of have my own little relationship with the reader and not the audience, because the audience isn't going to hear that. But the director looks at that as a way to go, okay, God, this helps me cast. Yeah. This helps me determine what she's going to wear. And the way they describe the room, or if I'm like, it's like I describe like a hotel room, like this is the place where, you know, sex is exchanged for money in this hotel room.
So you already know what it is. Yeah.
They then know how to. So that's also my way to communicate with my, you know, production designer, my wardrobe department, all that kind of stuff as well.
Awesome lesson.
So tell me about your pounding the pavement days, because I don't want to think that your life was 100% green lights.
No.
Yes, Lena, come in.
No.
Sit down, have a seat at the table.
Like,
so the day that you decided,
to go to LA to pursue your dream.
Yeah,
I assume in 2006. Or wait, yeah, weren't you writing? Weren't you with Girlfriends by 2000 though?
No, I was with a girlfriend the last season, like 2008.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say. So that was like 16 years old working on Girlfriends.
Yeah, no. Like because I graduated from college in 2006. So I literally like moved out there, and it's funny because my first internship really kind of was with Edmunds Entertainment, when it used to be called Edmunds Entertainment,
okay,
which was Babyface and Tracy when they were they still together? Maybe they weren't together anymore. I think they might have been.
Please say Half Plenty.
She's too young.
I wasn't there yet, but I knew about that movie.
Okay.
Knew about that movie.
That's my life story. I love Half Plenty.
Half Plenty is dope.
Who hooked you up with the internship?
You know what? Actually, I just found, because Columbia College has this great message board where you can see about internships. So I saw it on there. And then like this white guy, I think his name was Lucas. He was working for them. He called me in. I didn't need much. You know, he was like, okay, you on time, your resume is cool. And I interned for them, and you know, I was around Tracy and you know, those guys, and they had a studio and people would come in and do music. I remember Tyrese used to come up in there. And they had like very expensive cars. I remember Eddie Murphy might have been kind of sort of dating Tracy at the time, I think. Yeah. So I saw him a few times. But like they were doing like reality show stuff. They were like, I was like a PA on some of their stuff they were doing. But it was just a cool place because I was like, oh, these motherfuckers that did Soul Food. Like this is lit. Yeah. And so I was up in there. And then I started working at reality TV where I was like a person transcribing like videos for the Real World and shit. Like it was, that's how you make money when you live in LA. You got to work in reality. And then I started, because that was from like 6 p.m. to 3 a.m. every night. And because I wanted my days free so I could intern. So I interned at a literary agency that ultimately ended up repping me later. But mm-hmm. I was there from 9 to 5 in Beverly Hills and drove an hour to the Valley from 6 to 3 a.m. for like 2 months. Like
I was about
doing
to ask you where your first apartment was.
Yeah, deep in the Valley.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was your day job was 9 to 5.
But that wasn't even a day job. That was an internship.
Woo!
So I wasn't getting paid.
8 free hours.
But and then first from it was 6 to 3.
It started off as 3 days a week. And then they were like, well, we're going to bring somebody else in. I was like, no, I'll do it.
Yes.
Because I was like, if opportunity comes up, I want that opportunity. So they're like, okay, so you really want to work here 5 days a week and then go to work at night every night? I was like, yeah, I'll sleep on the weekends.
How long was this process before you felt there was a light at the end of the tunnel?
Man, I just kept thinking that. But I did that for about 2.5 months. And I kept thinking, like, I'm going to get something out of this. Like, me doing this, something's got to come out of it. And then sure enough, one of their clients, they were like, one of our clients needs a new assistant. And they happened to be running Girlfriends. And so I was like, I want to interview for that job. So I went in and, like, literally just sit in a room like this with my competition. And I was like, don't none of y'all know this show better than me.
I know that.
And
yes.
I walked in there, got the job, and it really was the start of my life, you know, in that industry. And you know, I got to meet Mara, Tracy Ellis Ross, like Kenya was working on The Game at the time. Like everybody I'm cool with now, like I met at Girlfriends. And all of them have, like Prentice Penny, who was like, he might have still been like staff writer. He now runs Insecure.
He's Insecure, yeah.
Karen Gist, who was writing on Girlfriends at the time, now runs Star. Regina Hicks was currently writing on Insecure. Like obviously Kenya Barris went on to create Blackish and Grownish and all this kind of stuff. So like all those people, and then like, you know, you got my black ass who's over here trying to do something too. But they literally, like, Kenya texted me last night. Kenya was like, bitch, you on fucking Kimmel? What the fuck? Like, he's like, I think for them, it's trippy. Because they remember me being, like, the showrunner's assistant.
Come up, yeah. Right.
Can you
like,
tell me,
Girlfriends.
What was your biggest, like, Mara lesson? I find her so fascinating
and dope. Mara's dope.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, the thing I learned, and she's not a person that's, like say this directly to me, but what I took from it was, like, she was a real, I think, a politician in that, like, she's like JFK. You know what I mean? Like she knows that in order to get you to pay attention, she's got to bring a look, a brand, a vibe. And I think that's what people don't really know about Mara's brilliance in terms of her brand is that when she walks in, you're already like sold.
Right. Cause she's gorgeous.
You're like, whatever
the outfit
it is,
right.
You telling me like, I'm going to buy it.
I'm believe it.
And I think that's a big thing I really picked up from her is that it's not just about having, you know, talent and scripts, but it's about what's your brand? Like, what's your personality? Like, who are you? And even like her and her husband, the kid, like that's a part of her brand. Like being a mom, being a wife and having, you know, doing Love Is or being Mary Jane, like all these things are pulled from her life and her like Girlfriends is pulled from pages of her diary. And I think I really picked up on that. I was like, oh, well, I should just talk about who I am and be myself. And people will always remember that. Like, that's why I was just telling some of my advice the other day. I'm like, these fucking general meetings that people have that they go on. I'm like, what's the fucking point? It's like, if you can't when you walk out of that room, they gotta you gotta haunt them once you leave the room. They gotta go like, I can't get this writer out of my head because the story they share with me, whatever. It's like go in there and treat it like a fucking therapy session. Don't be crazy, but like tell them like what's going on. Like if you went through a breakup, like say that. Like you know if you went through a thing, say that because you never know what they went through. They may be like, I went
that
through a breakup too.
Yeah.
Like what? And then next thing you know, you having a real connection with an exec that may not even like your script that much. But when you walk out the door, they like, I feel like that person just really gave me a real moment. And that's what I used to always do in those general meetings. I'm like, I'm going to walk, when I walk out of here, they're going to feel like they had a real conversation with me. And for the most part, they would, because I would give them some real shit.
What will prevent, not prevent you, but now that the heat is on, or now that it's on and popping.
Right.
Whitney Cummings once told me, like, at one point, it was so exhausting for her.
Yeah.
Fine-tuning every detail of her show. Yeah. And two Brooke girls.
Right.
And at the time, she was trying to develop, like, two other shows.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know, and people ask me all that, like, when do you sleep and all that?
Right.
But it's like, I mean, with me, it's like I kind of have a team for each project I do.
Mm-hmm.
So I can just come check the shoulders, check over the shoulders, you know.
Right.
But are you totally immersed in all the projects that you're developing, as in you have to micromanage every fine detail of all these projects, or... You know, at one point, will you become Dr. Dre and just... No shade?
Hell no, well,
yeah. Motherfucker, I'm Dre.
Look, nigga, I saw the Divine Ones, you know. I saw him in that studio, which is brilliant. His wife was like, when will you be home? Like, I don't know. Okay, cool, babe. That studio was crazy. But I think I don't micromanage every project. If I did, I would never sleep and I wouldn't have a healthy relationship. There are certain projects like 20s with that pilot, like I gotta micromanage that because I'm still trying to get a series order. There are people out there like, oh, you got another show. I'm like, no, not yet. Yeah, I got a pilot order. Me and Justin Simeon is gonna come and direct that pilot. Yes, so we're very excited to be working together again. We're gonna try to give them a phenomenal pilot so we didn't get a series order. And then it's about I'm gonna try to bring Susan Fales Hill in to co-show run that with me. She was the showrunner of A Different World, and she's phenomenal. But I want to bring her in to help me run that and have, you know, maybe have her teach me some things where I'm going to go like, hey, I want to do this and learn from her. The Shine, I have a phenomenal new showrunner. Her name is Ayanna Floyd Davis. She's a black woman. She's Jamaican. She's like the auntie I always, you know, never knew I needed. But she's a showrunner. So it's like, I'm there to help and guide, but she's showrunning. I got a project with Kim that Kim Whitley, who played my aunt on Thanksgiving. I wrote something for her, Lucy, based on her life. So we have it set up somewhere. We're still trying to get that series order. I still have some writing to do on that one. But yeah, I want to find a showrunner that really gets her voice and gets what I'm going for. So again, I think you're right. It's about having teams of people that you trust and you love and you fuck with and are really talented, because and there's things I'm producing. That's why I really like producing, because then I ain't got to like come in and advise and give thoughts and this and that, and then go, you could take it or leave it, but I think you should take it. You know, but I think that's really how I think you build a brand. And it's tough because you look at Whitney Cummings, and I remember that time where she was popping. Like everybody was like, she had all these pilots and this and that. And I think she's still really talented, and I think she's still doing really dope things. But I think for me, it's about also managing that. At some point, I'm going to step back. I'm going
to
go away for a bit I'm not everywhere. You know what I'm saying? But you see my work, you see my shows, you know what I'm saying? You see The Shy, you see 20s, you know, you see, you know, I know I'm going to pop up in season 2 of Dear White People, but it's like little things like that make sense. Or it's like we got the Spielberg movie coming out end of this month. I'm in that. Obviously, I'm out promoting that and things like that. But once that movie comes out, like, I'm going to step back a bit and go back into the lab and do some work. And I think that's really the trick, I think, is knowing when to pull back and when to come out. I love Kevin Hart, but Kevin Hart's kind of everywhere.
What did you say no to that, you know, not that you'll regret, but like something that was like, this is the dream, but I can't do it right now.
The Black Panther.
The spirit of the Black Panther.
Wakanda. No.
You not be stripped. Of the power. Here's
what I won't say exactly what it is, because I'm cool with the person that ended up writing it, but I did get offered to write a movie that ended up doing really well. And I was just like,
you can't say the movie?
No, I'm not gonna say it. No.
Well, you said no.
Yeah, but I don't want the person that ended up writing it to feel like,
they were second best.
I said no, so you go ahead. But here's what I'll say. But
Hollywood's still petty, that's what you're telling me?
In terms of politics, it's like,
I get it, because
she's my friend. But I feel like, to me, I was like, that's not my brand, or like, that doesn't speak to my brand. That's me writing for someone else's brand, and I don't know how that furthers what I'm trying to do. So I think that's, I think sometimes when you grab at these things, isn't that cool? I'm like, yeah, but who is that really helping? Because even if you look at like Black Panther, yeah, Marvel's a huge brand. Marvel may be bigger than Ryan Coogler, but Ryan Coogler made Marvel, not his bitch, but like they made, yeah. He made it like, mm-hmm. I'm going to do my thing with this movie so much so that it'll always be associated with me mm-hmm. and his brand. You know, more so. People don't even think of it as a Marvel movie. They're like, oh, yeah, that Ryan Coogler joint.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I think if you can do that, cool. But that particular thing, especially where I was in my career, I would have just been a higher hand. I'm like, nah, I'm cool. I want to make stuff that, like, really feels like me.
Lena, is it safe to say that nobody has tried to, like, dumb down or water down your brand, whether we're talking about your outside or your inside? Because it seems like you have a freedom. You feel a freedom, and you are allowed this freedom that somebody maybe 10 years ago may not have...
Now, that's my big beef. I still think more, I know a lot of gay Black celebrities that are not gay publicly.
Yo, your Essence speech when you was calling niggas out, like, listen, did you get some back?
No, it was nothing but love. I got a lot of love from people and a lot of folks that I know who are gay but aren't out yet. By the way, I wasn't like trying to like throw shade, but a couple people text me and said, yo, I'm not hiding, sis. You know, I'm just out here. And I was like, no, but I was like, no. I was like, I don't think that you
it's
are.
Like both of us.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I wasn't trying to call nobody. All I was saying is, particularly for gay Black motherfuckers, it's our responsibility to be a light at the end of the tunnel. Because it's like, if you look at how many Black people there are in Hollywood, and there's a nice number of us, and think about how many out gay Black people there are in Hollywood. It's about what? Me, Wanda.
Rare. You and
Frank,
Wanda.
Titus. Lee.
And you talk about women probably more than men, because Black men got a whole different set of...
But also, too, here's my other thing, too. And even in music, you know what I'm saying? A lot of times I'll be thinking about like some of these R&B singers who I know them.
Luther's straight.
Them.
Luther is straight.
Right.
Luther straight.
Well,
Luther,
but I'm talking about some cast... But here's the interesting...
You don't know sarcasm when you hear it.
I missed
and
that.
And thank you for saying that, Laia.
Yeah. But here's the deal. There's some R&B like Black men singers who are faking the funk, shall we say, singing to women when they know they don't want to be. And here's the deal. And I see them. I look at them on IG. I see the Acapella Tuesday, and I'm just sort of like. But it's so interesting to me because you look at like, a lot of cats like saying like, I'm really saying I do this. Like they're trying to be like, I'm not doing no auto tunes and shit.
You block them.
And they're dope. And they're I follow these cats. I love singers. I think it's great. But some of them, I'm like, dog, really? Come on, brother.
You're not fooling no one.
And a lot of them, they're like. I don't know why I'm not on yet. And I'm just saying, like, if you fucking came out and told your truth, maybe motherfuckers would talk about you. Now I don't know shit like, oh, let me be gay for pay. But it's like, to me, what Frank did, here's the other thing, too, about Frank Ocean. He's just dope, okay? I really fuck with his music, really like Blonde. I thought it was really dope. I think that because he's living his truth, it bleeds into the art. It bleeds into what he's doing. He can't not be just like this authentic motherfucker, even though like he's like this, you know, he's a weird guy. He goes away for too long sometimes. But there's something about it that just speaks to everybody. Like,
yeah, but see,
just
that's like, specialized. Are we ready for an gay R&B singer that just wants to sing and I'm gay and I'm not singing about a man? You think they're ready?
Yeah.
Wasn't Forrest Gump like a big hit?
Frank Ocean,
we talked about before we started the show?
What?
I just think this deals with the Thanksgiving episode. I think that just conservative Black Christianity is such a heavy burden on everyone. Mm-hmm. It's always like, every step you make is like, what will my mama think?
Look at gospel. Right. Why? I mean, come out wherever you are.
But once I stopped caring about what my mama thought, that's when I really, even though like it took me, I just had to come out to her and I went through that whole situation and we went through our thing and we finally have like found a comfortable place to be. Mm-hmm. But I realized in order to come out, you kind of can't give a fuck what anybody thinks, because you got to prepare yourself, because your mama may be like, okay, well, you do that and I'll be in heaven when you not, you know.
Right.
But it's like, you have to come to a place where you don't care. You got to be like, this is my truth. This is who I am. How you react to it is how you react
to it. And I'm going to walk in it regardless.
I got to say it.
So how did you convince, or how did the idea of the Thanksgiving episode
Well, it was born out of me, because I didn't have any plans on telling that story, because I just also didn't think it was that fascinating.
Is that
I don't know
real
why.
Verbatim? That's your real verbatim story?
Oh, it's like a full, like, I mean, thinly veiled version.
Wow.
Even down to the Brown Sugar video? Yo.
Oh, and yeah. I first watched Jennifer it, Aniston.
Yeah. I called him up. I'm like, yo, man, you're about to be in history. Like, I didn't even know what the episode was about, but for the oh, fact that y'all God. Watching that shit.
Well, because Aziz and
I could... was like, what's Master of None, man?
Oh, classic. Like, oh. So you got educated on black people.
That's a typical
Well, I was in London filming, so Aziz gratefully came to me so we could write the episode. I had to write it in 3 days because I had like 3 days off from filming, and Aziz was like, we'll get this done. So, but and what we did was, and I don't know why, but we just started like, because we were trying to obviously go back into like the 90s and us coming up, so we was like watching music videos, and one of them was like New Edition, Can You Stand the Rain? We watched D'Angelo, all this kind of stuff, and that's really kind of how that bled into, because we were like, what did you do all the time? And that's a real thing. When I was young, BET used to really be about fucking music videos. Like, we would watch The Countdown every Friday night and this and that. So I learned a lot about like just culture and swag and this through just music videos. So we really, Aziz and I both know we wanted to incorporate one, and that one just for both of us, it really sang to us. But it came out because like Alan just asked me, he's like, how did you come out? Because I was just talking about dating and this and that. He asked me and I started telling him the story, and they were like, bitch, that's the episode. Like, that's interesting. And I was like, is it? Okay. And then they were like, we want you to help write it. And I was like, I said no. I was like, dude, I got too much on my plate. I'm about to do the Spielberg movie. I got to put all my energy into that. I'm so shy. Hadn't been officially greenlit the series yet. I was still, we had a mini room, and I was just like, yo, Aziz, I cannot spread myself like any thinner than I'm already spread right now. And he was like, well, if you don't help me write it, then I would feel weird writing about myself. And so I was like, all right, man. I was like, cool. I was like, well, what is it going to be? He's like, I don't know. He's like, we'll outline it. We'll talk about it. We'll email back and forth. And he was a man of his word. So we did. We just like emailed back and forth. His brother, Anise, actually came up with the idea of like centering it around Thanksgiving, because I told him, I was like, I can't just do some straight line, like 30 minutes. I'm like, I got to go through the stages. But then Aziz really liked that. He's like, I like the idea of you showing you as a kid and growing up and this and that. So it just sort of really happened after our conversation we had while we were here in New York. And then I went off to London and we was like emailing back and forth and just kind of came together. Crazy. Listen. And then when Angela Bassett
how did y'all get Melina's ass?
Wow. Melina and Aziz. Because they were like, let's get Angela Bassett. I was like, both of y'all are fucking crazy.
Did she know what the show was?
I don't think she knew what it was. I think I was like, they reached out to her manager, and her manager knew what the show was. And I think her manager was like, this is like a show. Yeah, like, you should kind of do it. And it worked out with her schedule. Like, I think she had like a little bit of a break, and they came back like real fast. But I swear, because Melina always shoots for Melina Matsoukas, the amazing Melina Matsoukas, who directed the episode. But Melina always shoots for the stars, because she's just like, why not? Who gives a fuck? Come on, because she'd be kicking it with fucking Solange and Beyonce all the time. Right. And I was like, but I was just like, Melina, I was like, Angela don't know what the show is. She don't know who we are. I'm like, this is fucking nuts. But Melina was like, just let me ask. And I was like, all right. But then they came back like they were like, it's looking good. Like, Angela's ready and this and that. And, but then once Angela came on board, and then Aziz called me, he's like, we always call her Catherine Jackson because we're obsessed with Jackson 5 America.
Right, yeah, right.
He's like, Catherine's it. Like, but like, seriously, if people knew, like, me and Aziz send each other gifts of the Jackson 5 American Dream all the time. So random.
Man, like,
I'm wearing a
I didn't even know nothing about this.
We're obsessed with it. Me and Justin Simeon, we're obsessed.
I don't want you. I don't want you.
Like, go to bed. What are you going to do? Beat him?
Give me some pistachio.
Give me some pistachio.
I want some pecan. I want pecan. I want pecan.
Y'all,
like, ice cream.
Why do you know that?
We should have watched that movie so many times.
It ain't been on in VH1 in like 10 years.
Man, and the Temptations movie, I know.
No, he's like, if you cut Jermaine out of this group, it'll kill him.
Yo, other random casting question. Erica Mena? Let's talk about it. I love, very charming girl, by the way.
Super charming. That was awesome, Melina.
Did she realize she was... Was she in on the joke?
I think she was. Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. We knew whoever it was, we were like, we have to have the... And also, it's Lucy based on a real girl I dated. Don't fucking judge me.
Okay.
IG, honey. And so we put that in, and Melina was like, oh, I think we should get Erica Mena. And I'm not great about the Love and Hip Hop stuff. I don't really watch those shows. So I was like, what? And then... But Melina was like, no. But I think, like, Melina had auditioned her, and she told me, she's like, Melina, I think she'll be great. Because Melina was like, I think, she said, we need somebody fun who can play. And look, you're coming into to, it's nerve-wracking. I mean, it's a Netflix show. Like, you got Aziz's ass, you got Angela Bassett. There's a lot going on, so we needed somebody that could really handle it. And Erica was so happy to be there. And I remember her being like, all the haters going to be like, I'm here. We at the Netflix. Lena, we here. And I'm going like, who are the haters? What's going on? So I'm like, so Melina's like, Lena, you don't know nothing about what's going on. I was like, what's up? Like, well, she's pretty girl, nice, sweet girl. Yo. But Erica was like so happy. Like, she's like, and she was all cuddled up. She's like, Lena, what are you doing? I was like, oh, no, I got somebody. I got a girl. But she's very sweet.
I was
girl.
Happy for her seeing her on there.
No,
I was
she
like,
did great. Damn. She was great. And then I kind of after the fact, I'm like, oh, she's like this girl like on the show. Like people like follow her. They know her. I think she dated Bow Wow for a second. I was like, I need to like do my research.
When it came on and watching all of y'all at the Thanksgiving table, all I could think about was, I wonder if these people know what this is right now, that we're the fact that. Mm. And again, I was wondering, does Angela know like how masterful Masters of None is? And does Erica know like,
who knows?
Or do you like, I just felt that all of these great characters were at this table and only Aziz knew what he was cooking up, like bringing these people together that
I knew, because it was really me and Melina that really brought everybody together. You know, Aziz was kind of almost like, you know, he was sort of letting us like do our thing. Like, he would leave the set for time. Like, you know, he would go be in editing, and Alan would go. And I had to convince him to let Kim Whitley be that my aunt, because they're like, well, she's not New York based and we got to pay. I was like, I don't give a fuck. I'm like, she's a black female comedian, single mom. She can figure out how to get to New York. Sure enough, I called Kim. I'm like, can you get here? She was like, yeah. She was like, I'll figure something out. Cut to her as books a judging gig on Top Chef Kids. So they flew her out, and, you know, she did the show. Like, but me and Melina, like, we did that. Aziz like stood back and kind of let us do our thing, you know. And but that is that episode, to me, every woman in that, it's only, he's the only man on the whole episode. Yeah. A lot of people don't pick up on that right away, but it's like, he's the only guy, his character, little boys or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's women of color, and all women of color, and that's what happens when you allow us to do our thing and get the fuck out the way.
And does he understand too that, because for that episode, like, that episode is my way of introducing older black people to Masters of None, right? Like, I was like, mommy, you're gonna love Masters of None. Let me just show you this one episode.
Ah, yes.
And then, and she fell hard, and I've probably watched it about 6 or 7 times since, just like exposing people to the show.
Wow, I appreciate that.
Oh my, are you fucking kidding? I cried when, oh my God, the scene when Lisa come back. Lisa, right? That's the final girlfriend.
Oh, well, no. That's Michelle. Erica, Michelle.
Michelle, final girlfriend, when they had that moment in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And, like, Angela talks to her, and she's, and they just, and then y'all are all wearing these nice, like, pastel colors.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It was that's just costume department holding us down. You know, I mean, and I never, I thought, like, oh, isn't this cool? We got a really nice black episode of Master of None.
Right.
Wait, then, guys, can we stop for 1 second?
Oh, shit.
I am.
Look.
So
that's perfect.
Continue.
That's perfect. Because I really didn't think like it would take on that kind of life. And that's another thing too, when you do a Netflix show, you don't have to wait like until it comes out and people to tweet about it. But people immediately, but Aziz always knew, because Aziz was like, Lena, people watching this episode and they fucking love it. He would text me all the time because they would do like little screenings and stuff. And he was like, people fuck with Thanksgiving episode. And then when the Emmy happened, it was like icing on the cake, because we had so much fun doing it. And now Melina, I wrote a feature that she's going to direct. Like, Melina's like my sister for the rest of my life. Angela is like such a close, like, she's like family to me now. And now Kim, I'm doing this show. So it's like really spawned these different things that, you know, from that one episode of television.
Okay. Am I allowed to ask?
What?
Will there be a season 3?
You're allowed to ask. I don't know the answer, you know.
Okay, that's cool.
You know,
it's
tough, you know, with everything that's going on in the world. And look, I'm a big part of, you know, Time's Up, and, you know, very much, you know, an advocate of the Me Too campaign. I think people should be piping up. I know Aziz, you know, he was touched by it. And it was not easy for me during that time, because it's like, I can't just be, oh, rah, rah, I'm a part of this movement, fuck everything else. Like, this is someone who I've
know,
known for a long
blood.
Time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, he really saw something in me at a time where I didn't even think, like, I would have this kind of career. He really introduced people to me in a way. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, and he's just like he's my friend. You know, I can't just turn my back. I'm not that bitch. And so I really kind of got a real front row seat to what this means. And so for me, it was about people like, well, whose side are you on? I'm like, well, that's the thing. There aren't any sides. I feel like in this particular situation. Harvey Weinstein, there's a side. Kevin Spacey, there's a side.
Yeah, his
I think
situation
with Aziz's story,
is not,
way more gray.
You know, and look, I had a long conversation with him. I read everything, and I'm just like, I think there's a lot of shades of gray here. I think a lot of people have been in those scenarios, whether you've been the guy or the girl. And I think what I got from it was more about us as having to re-educate ourselves about what consent looks like, what it feels like, what it sounds like. And I think that just means it's not going to be fun for everybody. But I think that's something we just kind of have to do. We have to really make sure, and also just make sure we're being in tune with the person that we're kicking it with and making sure we're paying attention. Even if they say they're cool, maybe ask again.
I'm about to say, Lena, you better watch out too.
I gotta watch out for shit. I'm engaged.
Well, it was life before her, though. I'm just saying, like, no,
I'm good. I mean, okay. Like, you know, like, hey, but no. But also, too, but I'm a different kind of chick. I'm hyper aware, you know what I'm saying, of like, and I'm not saying that's because I'm a woman, but I think in terms of, you know, that's just how I get down. But I think if you're a comedian who's maybe not always great about paying super close attention, you know, I don't know if that's, but it doesn't necessarily make you a bad person. So it's just really, shit got really complicated. And that was the one story I saw that people were like, I don't really know where I fall
right.
in this
Me too.
One. So, you know, but I'm happy that it's opening up a dialogue. I'm happy that people are talking because that's, I think, the issue, that motherfuckers don't talk to each other.
Well, deal breaker for me is if she kicks you out of bed because you can't eat cookies in bed.
Is it? Oh, man. Is it?
Hey, man.
My fiance don't allow. She's like, she don't even like me eating on a couch. She's like, no, that's what the kitchen counter is for. And that's when we take the shoes off when you come in the house.
Okay, to our listeners.
No outside clothes on the
To our listeners out there, we kind of had a pre-conversation.
Here
we go. Let's get
that.
It.
To our listeners out there, we had a pre-conversation before the tape started rolling.
Yes, we did.
In which I sort of complained bitterly that.
Sort of?
Yeah, that okay. my new and last current whatever.
You better say last. I love it.
Oh, come on. No, I put a ring on it. I put a ring on it. Best thing I ever did. Best thing I ever did.
It's a race. Yeah.
But she won't let me eat in my bed,
which is a great thing.
That's already a problem. You calling it your bed,
Fonte?
You calling it your bed?
Yo, man.
Yo, wait. Everybody listen to Lena right now.
You calling it your bed?
Wait. Everybody listen to Lena right now. Would you just say Lena?
It's not your bed.
It's our bed.
It's y'all's bed.
I get it.
But you didn't get there yet. Hold on. You need to explain yourself more. You need to explain the whole. I've been on tour my whole life, and I'm used to my bed. And
yeah, I'm saying for me,
thank you, Lena.
I'm a hotel guy. I've been on tour for the last 20 years of my life.
Hotel beds,
so kind of even before this bed I got, all my beds were from the W Hotel. Like, I love hotel life.
Yeah, and but that's the person comes up behind tables. You. It's a clean up. And at a hotel, they coming in right after.
But I'm
you.
Not messy, man.
It's like watching just tennis. Like,
yeah, you gonna get some crumbs. Trust
yeah,
me, I do too.
In the bed, yeah.
Cause I'll smoke, put on, you know, All About Eve, and want to be washing in the bed. And but my lady is the only I can only do that when she's out of town.
Did I just hear that?
Yeah.
All About Eve.
And I thought I said love you more, Lena. I'm sorry. I just that was
All
mad.
About Eve. All get about deep into it. Or Wizard of Oz, one of the two. You know?
Is it an indica or is it a sativa?
If it's at night, it's indica. Yeah.
God, Lena. Mm.
Yeah.
Weed talk.
Vape.
Steve, chime in.
Nah, I mean, I'm like, you're like,
right. He's Steve, like, now it's Steve, my time.
Not his show right now.
Are you doing grass? With sugar. Are you doing... Are we dabbing? What's happening?
Yeah. No, so everyone agrees here that you shouldn't eat in bed. I mean,
man, it's a little dangerous, dog.
You too?
Yeah.
Do you smoke in bed?
Smoke in bed?
Do you smoke in bed?
No, you don't.
You would rather die than not smoke.
I don't want crumbs and shit in the bed.
Well, that's why you got the vape.
Yeah.
I do vape in bed.
I'm trying to get to vape.
Vape is...
Do you vape in bed?
Yeah, but there's no...
That doesn't count.
There's no crumbs.
There's no crumbs.
That's what's so great about it.
White people want to love.
You got to leave the eating in bed alone, man. We too old for that shit.
Can I ask a random Lena question? Since you and Justin working on something else, does that mean that it's a wrap for Dear White People season 2?
No, season 2 is coming. Season 2 is done. That's in the can. That'll be out in the summer.
Okay. Now back to eating in bed.
I don't feel like we're done with this. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Justin may go do some movies, but Dear White People is never dead. Dear White People is always going to live forever. We always
I just
got reasons.
Fell in love with that last
We always
months,
got
so.
Reasons to say Dear White People. Always. Even when we think we don't. It always comes back.
Shalandria.
Hidden Fences reminded us of that. We were like...
Hidden Fences.
Right.
So, explain... before we wrap, we do want to go... When does the Spielberg movie come
March
out?
March 29th.
Its title is? Ready Player One,
which is based on a best-selling novel written by Ernie Cline, Steven Spielberg. Here's a drink. We showed it to an audience for the first time at South By.
And I tried to get into that show.
He was trying so hard.
I was fiending, dude.
I wish like somebody would have. I would have tried to like figure it out. Oh, I was, like,
this one saw you on the airplane.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Do that. No.
Do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that.
It's already done.
It's already done.
She saw you on the plane, but it was too chicken shit to say hello.
What?
Yeah, she was like some weird stalker shit.
No, like, I did. What had happened was,
you should have texted Quest. Like, he would have told you, like, I'm like the most realest motherfucker. You
no,
come up
Ian,
to me.
My cousin Ian told me you were cool as shit. It wasn't about that, Lena. It's just that sometimes there are like five people in this world that like I'm real fans of their work and their art, and so sometimes it's hard for me to like approach. You know what I mean?
No, you should always come say what's up.
Just say hi. I mean, it's not.
But yeah. I'm glad we're talking now. But you could have told
you could have said hi, and you know.
I'll see you next week.
Oh, yeah, you would have been like, yo, I'm right on this, I'm on this show. Okay. Co-host. I'm like, oh,
true
dope.
Story, I saw you in the eatery before we boarded, and then I saw you sitting down in first.
This is getting weird.
And then,
this is
getting, okay, stop.
Oh, well, that's always awesome. Awkward. It's like, you see me sitting in first class, and it's always
first
like,
first of all, that whole walk is awkward. Like, the walk past
I know.
People
yeah. Figure first, something out. It's like, I feel bad. I feel like a lot of people up there feel bad, because we're like, we want you to have the TV and to be able to charge your phone as well.
And I'm going to use your bathroom. Don't tell me not to use your bathroom, because I'm coming.
That's why, like,
first class should board last. So then you don't know who the fuck is up there.
First class should board last.
No, I want to be on first so I can gloat at everyone.
Well, I know you do.
Come on, no. It's
issues.
Awkward.
Wait.
Look at the poverty patch.
No, listen. No.
All right. So you remember when Bone Thugs and Harmony did the MTV Awards with the horses?
The night with the horses?
At MTV Awards. They did Crossroads.
Oh, yeah. Crossroads. Yeah.
The chariots and all that. So we were that night with the Michael Jackson kiss with Lisa Marie.
Yeah. Oh, all shit. That.
So I was on an airplane at JFK, and like I had that moment with Bone Thugs and Harmony where it was like, you peasant, you. And we like we went to the coach section. We felt all bad about ourselves.
Damn.
All the Uncle Charles, all the motherfuckers were just like sitting first class.
But doesn't that make you appreciate it, though? Don't it make you appreciate that moment when you can sit in first class? You're like, damn.
No, but it was just like, hungry.
See you in economy.
We thought like we were peers and stuff, and you know, we were, no. Not, like, this security guard was like, no, not right now.
Wow. Oh, damn.
So,
bitter economy.
Well, yeah, I definitely don't have that.
It was like that.
So,
yeah, so always we were sitting in the back like, watch, one day we gonna ride first class.
Okay.
We gonna look down on everyone when they walk past us. So to this day, we always make sure we pre-board with the handicapped people to make sure that we're
yo. Damn. Yep.
Let
I
your
that
petty
bitter.
Flourish.
I ain't that bitter.
That is
I watched
so
that happen.
Well, Lena, I appreciate those sunglasses that you was wearing to make yourself feel like you wasn't really there, but we saw you.
Oh, no, I had the sunglasses. But here's the deal.
Yeah,
I did sunglasses
in first.
I do sunglasses because like I might have been like a little sleepy, a little tired.
I do sunglasses too.
Like, I just sometimes just be like trying to, you know, also you on a plane
that's
trying to zone out.
101. Sunglasses.
Shut up.
Nah, I just be going to sleep. That's why.
I don't be wanting this too much light.
Well,
too much activity.
I don't appreciate people that have their, you know, when I was a kid, open
had
up the window,
thing open up. Yeah, man, I was sitting in front of a kid. That I was like, man, fuck this kid.
Yeah.
You just seen the sun before. Man.
I know. I immediately put the shade down. I put the blanket over my head. I just be like trying to zone out.
Oh, you're one of those people to put
blanket
the blanket
over
the
head. Like, leave me be.
I don't know if I trust that with, you know,
on a plane.
Yeah.
On a plane like that, do a lot of white people recognize you? How does that work? I was thinking that too. I was like, do you get the.
Yeah, I mean, it's always weird. I don't know. It's like people, well, yes, a lot of white people for sure watch Master of None. So, you know, but it's weird. But sometimes you just see them, they look, they acknowledge, and they go, oh, yeah, it's a girl. And sometimes they'll say hi, sometimes they won't, but it's all good. Sometimes they'll come up
so
and ask for a
picture. So, more of this flight story, the what's my man's name that was on the flight with you from Hamilton? I know I should.
David.
Yeah.
So, the guy that sat beside me on the flight was like, oh my God, did you see David sitting in first class? Blah, 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 blah. I was like, did you see that Lena Waithe is sitting in first class? He was like, who's that? I was like, oh my God, she's the first black woman that went.
Yes. That I didn't speak
that
to.
That I didn't speak.
I know.
This is sounding.
Oh, shit.
Yeah,
the remix.
I
lost words.
Hands on your knees.
Yo, saw David. Even I said what's up to him. I don't know him like that, but I was like, what's up, brother? What's up?
Just figured
you
out what
you were talking about. The Ready Player One premiere.
Yeah.
And I want to hear like your story, because I had a friend that was there and she told me about like the sound.
The sound kicked out, right?
We blew the speakers. Yeah. We blew the speakers. It was like, it's a very like big freaking movie. It's like a blockbuster movie. That's what it is. And
Spielberg,
he fucking went in. And it's like, so the speakers blew. And the good news was everybody was so captivated that when the speakers, the sound went out, motherfuckers like lost their shit. They're like, no. Because it's a very critical point in the movie.
And then
we tried it again. The sound still wouldn't play. They're like, oh my God. And then the third time when they played and the sound went through, like everybody, like there was a little like standing ovation because they were ready to see how the movie ended. But it was just a phenomenal experience. And to sit in the theater with those people and like as excited as they were, and obviously Steven came out and surprised everybody, but it was just a phenomenal energy.
Was that your first time watching it?
That was my second time watching, but it's my second time watching it with the audience. It felt like a first time because first time you watch it, you're at the Warner Brothers lot, like there's like execs and stuff, so it's like, okay,
it's not a real
but
crowd.
Seeing it with these people, like it blew my mind.
And there was a DeLorean out front. It was the shit.
Well, yeah, because Ernie Cline drives a DeLorean. He pulled up in that motherfucker.
And working like with Steven Spielberg is like,
did you nerd
heaven,
out?
Heaven, dude. Heaven on earth.
Did you nerd out?
Over the DeLorean? Or just
no, over
in general.
Just working with Steven Spielberg. And
well, here's the thing. You got to play it cool. You got to act like it's fine.
Wait, have you ever nerded? Because I imagine that you play cooler than thou with any situation that you're in.
Yes.
And that gets you in the rooms better than nerding out with people.
Maybe.
But have you ever just lost your shit over someone that you met like, oh my fucking God.
I kind of did a little bit with Hallie. When I like, you know, it's funny because I had met her a couple of times, but like it's weird because at that point she knew me and she was like, oh, Lena, this is my friend. I was like, what's up? And it was Oscar night and we were at the Vanity Fair party. It was like the Oscars had happened, so it was an after party. And I just had to tell her, I was like, your Oscar speech like really made me feel like I could do anything. And I was like, so for me to be a first on the Emmy stage, I just couldn't help but think of you, and I wanted to be as eloquent in my speech as you were in yours. And that to me was like, and then I just started saying like, yo, man, I own Losing Isaiah on DVD.
Oh, wow. Just so you know. Lose on movie, though.
At least she said that.
I remember watching Alex Haley's Queen.
She was so good in
and
that.
And I said, I still can't believe you played second fiddle to Robin Givens in Boomerang. You're like, I was like going in. And she was just like, and my fiance was like, oh, here we go. Like, it just started coming out. I was just like, bitch, you mean something to us. Like, you're an icon. She was like, really? I'm an icon. I was like, yes. Like,
straight
you're an icon.
Like, she didn't know.
No, I think sometimes she's like, am
know.
I?
Really?
Like, what's up?
Trust me.
No, thank you.
Word.
She doesn't know.
She don't like. She's like I don't know. What was it? I was like, yo, Hallie.
Yo, Queen is a big deal. She
Jungle
don't even
Fever.
Like, yeah, Jungle Fever. I just think like I
love
think
should have brought your ass home last
I'm just,
night.
I was like, yo, Hallie, classic. You mean a lot to us, and I was like, you should always know that. And she's like, I shall receive that. She's like, thank you. But you could tell like she really was like, oh, okay, like I appreciate that. But like she's still like she's dope, and she's really had a great career, continues to have a really dope career, but she's just amazing. She's amazing. So I geeked out. I geeked out on her.
Right. I said the same thing to Cree Summer.
Yo, I would geek out over Cree too. And I've met her, like, we've been at like NAACP Image Awards together, whatever. But if I had an opportunity, I'd be like, yo, Cree, yo, I had that crush when you got with Ron. And you like, did the press.
That's she said that was like, an odd storyline. We talked about that. She was like, that
she was odd. Yeah. I thought it was dope.
I didn't believe her and Ron, though.
I didn't.
I did.
I didn't believe she went straight into a lawyer, and then it was.
Yeah, it was.
Yo, I want to talk to you about it, but here's the real tea. I think it actually made sense, because it's kind of like, that's how it is with people. It's a person that you kind of can't stand and get on your nerves. But also, it's like they were very different people when they were in college, and they didn't get together until after they had both like graduated. Although her and Shazad were lit. Her and Shazad, but also her and Shazad made so much sense. Like, of course, right. I mean, they look like brother and sister. So when her and Ron, I thought it was kind of hot. Like,
Ron,
I
didn't get about Ron because I just don't believe light skin on light skin love works.
Oh, that's right.
Like,
this is a great Fonte theory.
Yeah. Well, I didn't like him and Kim. Him and Kim didn't work at all.
I liked him and Kim because he loved her.
You could tell that the writers were like, oh, wouldn't this be cool?
What did you just do?
And they
like,
do a detour.
I think it was offensive. I'm sorry. I just meant because, you know, Kim had lost all that. Remember that episode when she revealed herself and the Angel Mama episode?
Kim was fine.
I like thick Kim. Wait,
Steve, have you ever watched an episode of A Different World?
No.
No, it's too blackety black.
It is really black. It's not as black as Amistad, but it's black. It's black.
Wait, is it on iTunes?
What?
A Different World?
It's
I don't
on,
know. I think it's on Amazon.
It's on, it's on iTunes. So you can buy episodes on iTunes.
Okay, I'll watch all my TV on Amazon.
Classic.
Speaking of Amazon, I watched The Shy. I watched the first two episodes Like I think I watched first episodes over at your house when we were in LA.
I love
and
it.
And then finally, when I knew you were coming, I was like, okay, let me get the rest of them down.
Call up, do your homework.
Yeah, let me do my homework. You know what I'm saying? Because I really did like the first two, and then life happened.
Yeah,
so I was like, but one thing I really like, it was one, and you have to pardon me because I'm terrible with character names. I know the actors, but I know the characters. So one thing that really rang true to me, it was a scene where you showed the kid Alex, that's his real name.
Kevin, yeah. His brother was Alex Tepper, but he plays Kevin. Yeah.
His scene where he's trying to get with the girl, and he has a crush on the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes to his sister, and his sister is like, oh, you got to respect women. You got to do this, and don't just tell her eyes are pretty, whatever.
Uh-huh.
But then you showed another scene where he's riding with Reg.
Yeah.
And uh-huh. Reg tells him something completely
The opposite.
He's that, like, shit was
ignore
so
ignore these girls, man. Treat them shit. Yeah.
And that, like, rang so true to me. Like, as a kid, like, as a boy, like, you know, you'll see your mom might tell you one thing, but then you look at your uncle that got all the hoes. It's like, well, he the one with the hoes, so I don't know.
He treated them pretty bad.
Yeah. Right.
Well, yeah, and I think that's what we really try to do, is to try to, like, be as honest and as authentic as we possibly can, and just really show, like, black life. And I feel like that's a part of it. Like, dudes they learn about how to be with women from other dudes. And we feel like Reg, who was sort of like, you know, he's that dude, he's a runner, he out here, you know, working for people. And we feel like, what would he say to a car full of one's a little brother and other boys? And we feel like this is what he would say.
That's
like,
exactly
he would say, like,
would
man,
said.
Fuck these hoes.
You those know? Kids are shining.
Oh, those kids are phenomenal. And
Papa's my dude.
Papa is a real Chicago boy, you know, and just a lot of personality, a lot of swag. And we're grateful to them, because that's what we get to have the levity, but also, you know, we deal with the real shit, you know, with the character of Jake, who is obviously sort of who's Reg's mm-hmm. bigger brother, where we see how the gangsters are born.
Yeah,
a lot of people think, like, oh yeah, these little black boys are born with, like, guns in their hands. We're like, no, it's nurture, you know, not nature.
It's not nature,
and I think that's sort of my mission to show. And also, sometimes you can be a part of that environment and go the opposite way. Whenever people get all freaked out about Chicago, I'm like, I'm a product of Chicago. So it's Chance. So it's Common. So it's Jennifer Hudson. You know, so it's like so it's Quincy Jones. You know what I mean? So it's like easy. You know, it's like that's also what that environment can produce as well.
I'll just say a question. I can't, again, his name, Steven, the from 21 Jump Street.
We always call him the 21 Jump Street.
I just call him
OG.
Who plays Q?
Yeah.
How did y'all get him? Because he's my favorite character.
Shit.
He kills every fucking scene. I love him.
Well, like, we kind of really wanted, like, those kind of guys used to be around my house. I live with my grandmother coming up. So those kind of cats were always around my house. Like, these old dudes who were, like, you know, wear the fucking silk shirts and the fedoras and whatever. I think they too cool for school. And so I really kind of wanted to have that element of Chicago, like that kind of, like, OG. Like, who
Stephen
used to run the streets.
Right? Stephen Williams.
Yeah. Okay. I always knew him as Pam's rich boyfriend from the episode of Martin. You know, he's like, the skybox.
Ah, damn, he was. Oh,
you too young. She too young for the 21.
And the cop and the Blues Brothers. Steve,
oh, Bill. Yeah, I love we all
the
have
sheriff
different
and the
references.
Brothers.
I love you, like, okay,
thank
white
you for
guy.
That
yeah, she was 21.
White,
was 21
white people
Jump
watch 21 Jump Street. The captain.
Yeah, 21 Jump Street. He's the captain.
Fuck yes, they did.
No, jump.
But I was like, we gotta have that element of, like, what Chicago streets used to be. Like, there was a code, there was an honor, because we kept hearing that from a lot of we would just talk to, like, cats from Chicago who have been in, you know, in the streets or whatever, and they were like, there used to be a code, and, like, now there isn't, and that's the difference. And so we kind of want to show that character, and you'll see how. Now, if you're caught up, you know how he's connected to the story. I'm not going to talk about it.
Nah.
But and then the finale is, if you liked him, like, the finale is going to really be dope.
Okay, cool.
That's all I'll say.
I was going to ask, how in the age of the political climate we're in now, where people are so quick to say, what about Chicago?
Right.
Like, they're really concerned about Chicago. I mean, how heavy does that weigh on your mind when you're, as far as how this show is presented to us? Because even for me, maybe the first 5 minutes when I started watching the pilot, part of me was like, okay, I'm waiting for the gratuitous violence that's just what we know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, what were your opinions as a Chicago filmmaker?
Mm-hmm.
What were your opinions on Chirac?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. It's like, I feel like everybody has a right to...
And Spike's been on the show before, so he knows we have beef with it. But
oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, at the end of the day, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to say this, but I wouldn't be sitting here if it weren't for Spike. You know, like, right. I watch his shit, and like, you know, it's like, that's this... we're all his sons and daughters, whether we like it or not. And... my thing is, he has a right to tell a story about Chicago. The tough thing is like, you're going to get a unique story from him because he's not from there. Mm-hmm. Like, if I told a story about New York, it may not feel 100% like New York because mm-hmm. I ain't come up, you know, over here. So I think... And I think what he was trying to do was just bring attention to what was going on. And also, he did it through his lens and through his vibe and how he gets down. So I would never attack the movie. I just think, for me... When I, you know, again, mine's not a movie, it's a series, but this is Chicago through my lens. Mm-hmm. And I think both are valid, but people can also have a right to say, I don't fuck with Chirac and I fuck with the Shy. That's their right. Or some people may say, I only fuck with the Shy. I like Chirac more. That's their prerogative. So I think ultimately we all have a right to make story, to make a movie or a TV show about a particular place. I think it's just a matter of, you know, I want to just, my shit, I want to be grounded as fuck, real as fuck. That was my mission. I was like, how can I make sure? And also, I think there's ways we could be better about that in season two. And that's my mission as well, to make it blacker, to make it more authentic, to make it more rooted in the city. Because that's my goal, is just to get a really accurate snapshot of the city. Not a super positive one, not a super violent one. Because we don't shy away from violence on the show. Like, we approach it.
But not super violent. I didn't find the show to be super. It's not, it didn't feel exploitative.
No, because,
you know, I mean?
I'm just like, that's not all Chicago is. You know, like, Chicago's also block parties. Right. Chicago's also little kids, you know, not crossing certain blocks. That was a big mm-hmm. thing for me. Like, my mom was like, okay, you can't go past that street. Like, okay, so I want to incorporate that into the show. It's full of grandmothers, you know, it's full of like the
Chicken,
you know,
Man. I like, I can't remember his name. I like
Sonny,
him.
You know, it's sort of like Arlo Harold's Chicken, you know. It's like, and you got people, because this was my experience, where people who were in the community who I wasn't related to feel very much like my family, because they saw me come up, they would like look out for me, they contribute to my college fund, like all that kind of stuff. And I think that's the thing I really want to get across about Chicago, is that we really are very familial. We're very much like a community. If anybody's ever been to Chicago, mm-hmm. like, it feels like a small town. And yeah, I think that's the thing that people don't get when they watch other shit.
Where they were in where Miss Ethel is talking to I can't remember the nurse
character. Yeah, Jada. Emmett's mom.
Yeah, his mom, and she's like, "Get me my cigarettes." Yeah, I knew what it was. I was like,
"Yeah,"
and you know, she thought she was asking for cigarettes, but that was where she kept her money.
Yeah,
and like, that was so.
And
real,
that's based on my grandmother. You know what I'm saying?
Old folk would not fuck with banks. Like, yeah, was straight up.
No, and I think, and that's, to me, there's a hominess that I'm trying to bring to the show and to show people the city that they just haven't seen before, because it's like, I'm from there. Like, I know those people, and my mom still lives there. You know, a lot of my family's still in Chicago. So I'm always going to have a connection to it in a way that just other filmmakers just won't. And that's cool.
Quest, when are you going to exec produce the 215?
Got him.
Look at him, speechless.
Welcome back to Jam with Sugar.
I have enough on my plate. I'm still trying to exec produce, get a piece of Chat with Sugar.
Yeah. Aren't we all? Mm-hmm.
So, well, you know, do you have anything else?
I do not.
She's just one about 215.
Oh, no, I'm good. Just, okay, thank you for all you do.
I was about to say that. Yeah, thank you, Lena. Please don't go anywhere.
I ain't going nowhere. Okay. I may back up. You may not see my face, but you always hear my work.
I just want to hear your voice. As long as I can hear your voice, got I'm
you.
Good.
I'll just keep coming back on the podcast.
That's
keep doing it.
That too.
Keep doing it.
Well, we thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank y'all for having me.
And on behalf of Sugar Steve, host of Chat with Sugar, I'm Big Bill.
Flash, it's lonely at the top.
Fontigolo, proprietor of No News is Good News.
Yes.
And also, It's Laia. And thank you, Lena, for coming on the show.
Thanks for having
this
me.
This is Questlove. We will see you on the next go-round. And shout out to Boss Bill. Take care,
bro. Yeah, get better, Boss Bill. Yeah. Go to urgent care. Stop fucking around.
Yeah. R.I.P. Craig Mack.
R.I.P. Craig Mack.
R.I.P. Craig Mack. Yes.
All right. And
the other guy.
Good day.
Okay.
What? Stephen Hawking. Yeah.
Stephen Hawking. Damn.
And Matt Dyke.
Only on this podcast.
With Craig Mack.
And that white dude who knew the sign.
Right.
Yeah,
that was him.
Damn.
Hey, from The Simpsons.
Hey, man, how you going to do that sign?
Oh, my God.
Wait, time out.
There's some tasteless jokes that are about to happen.
Turn the fade back on. Just... Wait a minute. Hang on.
Space bar.
Your Stephen Hawking reference is from his episode of The Simpsons?
Wow.
I don't... I knew who he was before.
You know the movie?
I knew it was so blackety black.
I love
the theory of it.
I can't even play the theme now. I already shut down my machine. That is awesome.
That's amazing.
Anyway, all right, yeah, shout out to Craig Mack and Stephen Hawking and Matt Dyke, proprietor.
Matt Dyke, oh, man, Delicious Vinyl.
Delicious Vinyl, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we will... This is the only podcast to close off on death.
I know. It's like RIP. Like, I like you did it too. It was so low key. You were like, shout out to Craig, man. I'm like, no, RIP.
Yes, RIP.
I feel like Boss Bill should add Gangsta Lean by DRS in post. Like,
yes.
And this is for my homies. Out,
all right, we'll see you on the next go round. See you.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.